What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Coming up on Stu Does America, you know the abortion case in front of the Supreme Court that's been going on. Well, we'll be joined by the woman who wrote the bill. Representative Becky Curry of Mississippi joins us today. A trans swimmer at Penn University is making waves, get it, with her teammates. Only LeBron James would be dumb enough to miss out on my merch discount I've got going on right now for Christmas. Use the code STU20 for StuDoesMerch.com. 20% off all the swag, including the very popular Don't Be an Idiot, Don't Be a LeBron t-shirt and other items. And it's not the government's job to regulate, well, you know, pretty much anything in my view. But social media, you know, I don't know. I mean, what are the alternatives when these big tech companies suck so hard? Let's find out as we do big tech versus families.
Stu Does America.
You might occasionally go on a social media app and find things that you really like. I mean, there's a lot of content out there that's enjoyable. Like, for example, a little show called Stu Does America, available everywhere you get your social media. And after going through the stuff for this segment today, maybe this should be the only thing you follow. Maybe you should turn everything else off. But, of course, selfishly, I'd love for you to follow us. And I think there is a lot of value, of course, on following content that you enjoy and get something out of. I have an account on Instagram that you can follow, Stu Does America. And I have an account, a private account that I use, you know, really just for, you know, following food accounts. Now, you might know this about me. I happen to be America's only conservative vegetarian. So one of the things I do with my little personal Instagram account is I follow a bunch of food places that are, you know, in my area because I want to see them post food so I can just get a little bit fatter to do the show every day. I don't want to be a thin host. People hate thin hosts. They hate them. So what's funny about that, though, is that there's a new feature, I think it's pretty new at least, where they're recommending all these pages for you on Instagram. And of course, this has been around on social media for a long time. I don't follow a particular account, but they say, hey, I see that you follow this account and this account and this account. You'd probably like content from this person. And you just realize like how dumb some of these algorithms are at times. I mean, because I follow vegetarian food places, they basically think I'm a female communist. Now, you might say, wait a minute, you know, I watch your show every day and you kind of seem like a female communist. And I can understand that point of view. But it's funny because I really don't need to hear the communist views of some lady who also happens to be a vegetarian in San Francisco. Not really one of my priorities. In fact, some of these algorithms that serve ads to you are so, so bad. It's hard to even imagine. Let me give you this one. This was served to me today on my Twitter account, and I had to pull it to you just to show you how stupid some of this stuff is. It is an ad from the New York Times. Now, first of all, I'm not a huge fan of the New York Times, so that's number one, okay? This is the ad that it says. It says, on my first night wearing the jacket, I had only to strut a few blocks in Soho before running into a one-time Hinge date. And Andre Wheeler writes of his Yeezy Gap jacket, "You look rich," he said. Now, let me go through this bit by bit to just show you. I don't like the New York Times. I don't live in an area that's, generally speaking, cold enough to wear jackets. I have never in my life, I've not taken one step that is part of a strut in my entire existence. Walking a few blocks sounds terrible to me. I never go to Soho. I don't live anywhere near Soho. I have never been on Hinge. Pretty much no one has ever wanted to date me in my entire life. I've never dated a dude. I've never dated a dude named Andre. And in my worst nightmares, I would never think to purchase a Yeezy Gap jacket, nor do I want to look rich. Literally every single part of this ad is something that I would despise or just find generally unlikable. And yet they're like, well, you know who's going to like that? Stu. He's got to get that Yeezy Gap jacket. I mean, at times I go back and forth between big tech being this overarching evil enemy that's going to control all of our lives to how incompetent and terrible are these people? I mean, the New York Times spent money to serve me that. This is where we are in our society. There's been a bunch of testimony, most recently from the head of Instagram, talking about the effects of social media and all these big tech companies on kids and your family. And this is something I find to be, you know, really personal and important because I got a couple of young kids and they're just young enough where they're not really, they're not really going to the worst of the internet yet. But as we all know, this is around the corner for every single child at some point. And so you want to do your best to try to control that experience for at least as long as you can. You can't control it forever. All you can do is build a foundation and hope your kids don't become train wrecks. It's kind of all you can do. Let me give you some of this testimony here. One of the big things Instagram is being charged with is this even a safe experience for kids? I will tell you, I don't think it is, but this is what Instagram had to say about it.
As the head of Instagram, it's my responsibility to do all I can to keep people safe. I've been committed to that for years, and I'm going to continue to do so. Whether or not we invest more than every other company or not, doesn't really matter for any individual. If any individual harms themselves or has a negative experience on our platform, that's something that I take incredibly seriously.
No, I mean, he was very, he was a little verklempt, as they say, with his voice there. And, is this true? I mean, I don't think, look, people, generally speaking, of course, have some empathy, I think, for people who might have a bad experience at their place. But, you know, Instagram's made a lot of decisions, along with their parent company, now called Meta, that don't seem to indicate that safety is the highest priority for their users. In fact, the best thing they could probably do is just unplug the website and never have it come on again. That's one idea, throwing it out there. That might be the safest thing that they could do. Surgeon General has talked about this with social media. They have something that came out. It's called Parenting Youth Mental Health. Protecting Youth Mental Health, the U.S. Surgeon General's advisory. Here's how it reads. When not deployed responsibly and safely, these tools can pit us against each other, reinforce negative behaviors like bullying and inclusion, and undermine the safe and supportive environments young people need and deserve. Masseri was there as well, talking about what he thinks would be a good solution for all of this. Watch.
We believe there should be an industry body that will determine the best practices when it comes to what I think are the three most important questions with regards to youth safety. How to verify age, how to build age-appropriate experiences, and how to build parental controls. The body should receive input from civil society, from parents, and from regulators. The standards need to be high, and the protections universal. I believe that companies like ours should have to earn some of their Section 230 protections by adhering to those standards.
You can see the pressure on these guys because now they're basically, let me give you all the rules you should put on us so we can continue to make all of our cash. There was a back and forth as well about Instagram Kids. Now, Instagram Kids was this idea, there's like a YouTube Kids. If you have kids that are young, you may use some of these services. There's YouTube Kids that's supposed to, basically filter out the bad stuff so kids can watch YouTube without being recommended like terrible, terrible things that they shouldn't be seeing. And I think there's a risk here. When we talk about politicians grilling social media executives. And I want to be completely honest about this. I am really concerned about these issues when it comes to social media and big tech. I also don't particularly like this sort of theater that we put together where we have senators come up and I'm going to finger wag and I'm going to tell you that you're really bad and I'm going to do lots of things because I think it's important. Like, some of it to me just strikes me so inauthentic. Now, Richard Blumenthal is famously inauthentic. Here he is, though, talking about Instagram Kids.
Will you commit to make the pause on Instagram Kids permanent? In other words, stop developing site for an app for children under 13.
Senator, the idea of building a version of Instagram for 10 to 12-year-olds was trying to solve a problem. The idea being that we know that 10 to 12-year-olds are online, they want to use platforms like Instagram, and it's difficult for companies like ours to verify age for those that are so young they don't yet have an ID. The plan was to always make sure that no child between 10 and 12 had access to any version of Instagram, even one that was designed for them, without their parents' consent.
So, and like, look, I have some sympathy for that argument, honestly. I mean, you're right, of course, people get online and it would be great. I mean, YouTube Kids is considerably better than regular YouTube for kids. You know, they take away most of the bad stuff. It's not perfect, but it's better. Obviously, best case scenario, you don't have your kids on YouTube at all. But, you know, they tend to find their way there and it's difficult to control. And that's kind of what I want to get into here in a minute. But what Instagram seems to do, particularly with young people and not even just kids, but teenagers and even young adults, is to continually drive them to terrible, terrible content that will keep them on the service longer and longer. And that's the problem here, is the priorities of these companies don't seem to have anything to do with safety or health. It has to do with keeping people's eyeballs on these screens until the end of time. Here is Blumenthal going on about some of the research the Senate was doing here in preparation for this particular hearing.
We have a teen account with all the protections on, the filters. We searched, quote, slit wrists, and the results I don't feel I can describe in this hearing room. They are so graphic. That's within the past couple of days. I described to you an account that looked at, in effect, eating disorders and attracted the same deluge of self-harm and anorexia coaches.
If at the top of your resume is the term anorexia coach, you're doing life wrong. Just in case you were wondering, you need to kind of change directions in your existence. But it's true, this stuff is all out there and being targeted at young people. A lot of times, not even if you don't search directly for it, you're able to make your way to this content. TikTok had a story come out about them where they went in and analyzed their algorithm. And of course, most of these algorithms, as we point out, some of them are really stupid. Some of them do the basics, right? Like if you like, another thing Instagram thinks about me is that I'm Canadian. Now, as you may know, I'm a Canadian sports hero, Canadian sports celebrity. But I also like the Toronto Blue Jays, and because I like Blue Jays content, they're constantly serving me things about Canada. Now, I don't go to Canada often. I like the Blue Jays. That's it. So some of it's just that. Okay, this guy likes the Blue Jays. He probably liked this restaurant in Toronto. Okay, I get it. I mean, you know, okay, fine. But it goes further than that. Like, for example, on TikTok, which I thankfully do not have an account on, they will recommend videos, and they get obviously good enough to recognize what kind of content you want. But instead of serving that content to you right away, over and over and over again, because that's what you're looking for, they will intentionally serve up content that you're not looking for, that they think you might also like, before they give you the stuff that you do want. Why? Why would you do that? Well, they figure if they keep serving you the same types of videos, you're going to get bored and turn it off. And if they give you six videos in a row you don't really like that much, the seventh one they know you're going to like, well, you get in a pattern of scrolling and scrolling and scrolling more often, and you're on the site for seven videos instead of one. And that's the problem here. This is an economy. There's a podcast out today from the New York Times, The Daily, that talks about a site where people are encouraged to commit suicide, to figure out how to do it, what methods to do it. And they had to go track down, you know, through all sorts of hacked documents and everything else just to find out who owns the thing. There's so much stuff out there. Blumenthal went back at the head of Instagram and tried to just lock him down on where we are in this back and forth between big tech and big government. And I keep bringing up Blumenthal for a reason here. Watch this quote.
I believe that the time for self-policing and self-regulation is over. Some of the big tech companies have said, trust us. That seems to be what Instagram is saying in your testimony. But self-policing depends on trust. The trust is gone.
Now, you might expect a Democratic government official to be promoting the idea that they're going to control a big company. I mean, that's not exactly out of the realm of the normal day of Richard Blumenthal. But let me also give you Marsha Blackburn, who is not someone who's looking to control every company that she can get her hands on. Look what she said.
Mr. Messeri, we are telling you, children have inflicted self-harm. They are getting information that is destroying their young lives. And we are asking you, have some empathy and take some responsibility. And it seems as if you just can't get on that path. So we are going to continue to work on this issue.
You see this even from conservatives who don't necessarily immediately react with government control every time there's a problem. They're seeing this. They're seeing this problem. And now really both sides are coming at big tech to try to control them and make sure that they're doing these things because they just don't seem interested in doing it. And I will say, look, my kids are not on social media. I hope they never, maybe when they're 45, we'll allow it. But they're not on social media, and I don't plan on them being social media, but it's not even just social media. You know, they're playing a harmless kids game on our phone for a few minutes, and the ads pop up, and the ads are bizarre and disturbing content sometimes. They're watching, they go on YouTube and they're watching a craft video, and then it recommends something, maybe it's not even just harmful and terrible, but just vapid and awful nonsense. And you just get to the point where you think, both sides are now coming after you. Do you see this, big tech? Do you see this? Both sides are coming to a point of agreement, a rare moment of bipartisanship where they think you're so terrible, they're going to do something. And when, as a person who's very skeptical of government influence in things like this, or really almost everything, it's really difficult to understand why they make it so hard on parents. These are devices that parents purchase, that parents set up, that parents pay for the internet, they pay for the devices, they pay for these services, and it's almost impossible to control the content that goes onto them. I have spent the better part of the last couple of years trying to get all this crap set up just so, I understand eventually the kids are going to see things that I don't want them to see, but I'm not trying to hasten that whole process. I'd like to control it for as long as possible. And yes, I can take my kids completely off of them, and sometimes I do. But at some point, a lot of their schoolwork is now done on these things. So it's almost impossible to completely eliminate it. And why there isn't an easy way to control this from a parental perspective, I don't know. I've signed up for services. I've had people talk me through stuff. I've had tech people look at it. You go through all this and it's almost impossible. And I fear for this is almost a just completely selfish point here, but I know this is coming with my kids in a few years and it's going to be a nightmare. And I don't know how I'm going to control it. And this is the point. Adam Mosseri said, there should be an industry body that determines the best practices. The body should receive input from society, regulators. The standards need to be high. And I believe companies like ours should have to earn some of their Section 230 protections by adhering to those standards, such as verifying age. And, that might be part of the whole package. But we're the parents. We're the people who are going to allow younger kids to be able to look at these devices or not. So why don't you make it easy for us? Give me a freaking button that I can just press and make sure my kid's not looking at some terrible content like they were describing in these last couple of hearings. There's no reason for that. And I keep thinking to myself, what is the purpose here? Why isn't it easy? And the only thing I can come up with is they don't want it to be easy. I understand that it's impossible to filter every piece of content. I get that something can slip through here and there, but that's not the problem here. The problem is there are very few options to be able to control the content for your kids. You have to buy outside services and go through hours and hours of connecting them to all the different devices and apps and all of that. And then it still doesn't seem to work. It's still overwhelming. And unless you're a freaking tech genius, you can't get any of it done. Why is this hard? The people in the Senate, people that are Republicans and people who are Democrats, are going to continue to come at these companies, and they're going to try to do something to solve this problem. Not because government's so great, not because they probably even care about this, but because they know their constituents want it stopped. So why not make it easy? You spend so much time making sure you can recommend me the Gap Yeezy jacket, whatever the hell that is, so I can look rich in Soho with my male date. You go through all that process to serve up content that you think people supposedly like. Well, you know, I don't understand it. Why can't it just be nice and easy for parents to be able to control the experience for their kids? This is not asking too much. And I think the answer is they find it more valuable to keep their kids on these services. They know they're growing little soldiers for their stupid apps. And they know long term, they're going to get people on these things and they're never going to leave. And that means more money in their pockets. And, look, whether you think it's right or wrong, if they continue to go down this road and do not make this easy for parents to be able to control the experience for their own kids, at least what's going to wind up happening is the government is going to step in, whether you like it or not, whether you think it's the right approach or not. If they don't do it, the government's going to wind up cracking down. And I hope these apps are ready for that, because it's going to come, and it's going to come hard, because the rest, thunderous applause is going to be the background noise of these sorts of regulations. And, you know, these companies, they've had a great benefit of a free market, which the internet largely is, but they're going to wind up, whether I like it or not, getting pushed around by the government, and watch all of the creative freedom and the money printing machine freedom they've had over the past 10 years go away. So if you happen to be a giant tech CEO watching this program, do something good for once. Back in a second. If you happen to be freaked out about the government's rampant spending and skyrocketing inflation, which, by the way, Janet Yellen announced just the other day, we probably shouldn't use the term transitory anymore. The term transitory the whole time. Guess what? It was transitory. It's time to protect your savings, diversify your savings into physical gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of satisfied customers. Right now, thanks to a little-known section of the IRS tax code, you can legally move your IRA or 401k into precious metals with no tax implications or penalties. To get started on protecting your savings with gold in a tax-sheltered account, you can request a free info kit from Birch Gold by texting the word STU to 989898. It's a comprehensive 20-page kit, reveals how gold and silver can help protect your savings, how you can move more of your, maybe some of your IRA or 401k out of some volatile stocks or wherever you might have them, and move them into a precious metals IRA. There's zero cost, zero obligation to get the info. So why wait? Check it out. Text the word STU to 989898. Get the free info on gold now from Birch Gold Group by going to your phone, texting STU 989898. You may not know the name Becky Curry, but she may be responsible for one of the most important things that have happened in the United States in a really long time. She's a four-term House representative in the Mississippi legislature and author of the Newsweek opinion piece, "I Authored Mississippi's Abortion Bill. Here's Why." I'll make sure to tweet out a link to that article shortly at Studios America. Representative, thank you for taking the time to come on the program.
Thank you for having me.
One of the interesting things, I want to get into the bill and why you wrote it, but one of the interesting things I thought that came out of the oral arguments and the reaction to it was this sense that these male Supreme Court justices shouldn't be mansplaining abortion to women. And I thought it was kind of interesting that the bill was written by you, a woman who seemingly has a completely different view than everybody on Twitter. How did you come to the idea to come up with this bill, and why did you do it?
Well, I wrote this bill with a lawyer friend of mine. And, you know, we did a lot of research, and I'm a registered nurse, and I worked in labor and delivery for a long, long time. And I remember, you know, unfortunately for some women that lost their babies, those babies would fight to live. And it was very disheartening. You know, it was a trauma for the mother. She lost her child. But then, you know, we had to sit there for a long time while that baby struggled to live. And this is back in the early 80s when technology wasn't anything like today. And so it just was the right time. We did a 20-week bill several years earlier. But when we started working on the 15-week bill, I just always knew that there was something special for this bill, and that, you know, I don't want to sound like one of those people, but I always felt it was always going to go all the way.
Mm. So why 15 weeks? There are other, you know, there's a Texas bill, obviously, they've talked about 6 weeks. There's many in the country at 20 weeks. Why did you select 15 weeks?
Well, it's 3.5 months pregnant, and I think it's time enough for anybody to decide if they're going to continue to carry their child. And, you know, I believe that life begins at conception, but, you know, I just never believed that I would be able to send that bill to the Supreme Court and overturn this completely. So 15 weeks seemed like a very common sense bill. 3.5 months pregnant, you know, the baby feels pain, and the abortion procedure is very traumatic at this point. The baby is chopped into pieces, and you know, here we are with someone who feels pain, and I just felt like that should be the cutoff. So it was very easy for me to do that. At this point in life, that baby sucks his thumb, feels pain, can taste what the mother has eaten, and all of its major organs are there. So I just believe that it's time, if you're going to make that decision, I think if you're struggling to make that decision, that 3.5 months is plenty of time to do that.
Does it surprise you at all that this issue of all issues has become such a divisive one? I mean, it seems like everybody who, you know, a baby's born, everyone's excited about it. Everyone goes and you know, loves on the mom and dad and supports them. And everyone knows that the baby's adorable and all the things that we do to celebrate birth. It seems shocking to me that this is the one issue that the left continually wants. It's the hill they want to die on constantly. Do you have any idea why that is?
Well, I do think that it is just an absurd thing, you know, because I don't know anybody that wants to kill a baby. And I especially do not know anybody who wants to kill a late term or have a late term abortion, you know, but we do need to celebrate life. And here in Mississippi, let me also say that we're coming into an upcoming session in January, and we're going to be passing a lot of bills that are going to support the mother. You know, we don't want to say, okay, well, you have to make this decision by 3.5 months, but then we're not going to help you after that. So, you know, we are doing a lot of things in support of women in the upcoming session. But why the Democrats hold on to this, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. You know, we wouldn't do it to puppies. You know, we wouldn't do it to a lot of things, but we will do it to babies. And, you know, I don't think that America wants to be in the same category as North Korea and China, which is where we are right now.
Yeah, you write that in your column for Newsweek, talking about the seven nations on Earth, only seven on Earth, that allow abortion on demand after 20 weeks. We spent a good amount of show last week going through the laws of Europe. That's supposed to be such a progressive continent. And all of their laws are more restrictive than even some of our most conservative states here in the United States. I mean, is that part of the motivation to make sure we're not in the category of a place like North Korea?
Well, my motivation is to save babies' lives. And you know, with this bill, if it is taken as written, we will save a lot of babies' lives. And I have to tell you something, as a nurse, we will save a lot of mothers' lives as well. You know, I have treated a lot of women who have serious infections after abortion, hemorrhage, sometimes even have to have hysterectomy because they can't stop bleeding. So, you know, there's ways to look at this all around. I believe it's about the health of the mother and the child. So, you know, if they don't take this at 15 weeks, like is in the bill, my hopes are that they give the state's rights back that should have never been taken from us. There's nothing in the Constitution that should have allowed this to be taken from states. And Mississippi, this bill was passed, a bipartisan bill, and we are a pro-life state. And, you know, I believe that the states need to not have this right taken away from them. I challenge anybody to find where it is in the Constitution that you can have an abortion up until time of birth. I just don't believe it's there. And we've let 9 people sit there and make this rule. And it's just time for it to end.
Mm. One of the arguments they made in front of the Supreme Court, and they've made this over the years many times when it comes to abortion, is that it's actually better for the mom to have an abortion for her own personal safety than it is for the mom to actually give birth. You're a nurse. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think it's ludicrous. You know, I know very few people that are not depressed after having an abortion. I have treated people. I have friends that have had abortions, and I know no one that doesn't regret it. And unfortunately, it can lead to other problems of depression. So if we really want to help women, we want to make sure that they are able to make a decision. And like I said, at 3.5 months, I think it's time. You can feel the baby move, you know, all of the organs, so forth, all the things we've said. We want to make sure that they're given good information, and we want to be there afterwards to support them with whatever decision they make.
I think a part of this, Representative, is the left kind of comes at the conservative line of thought with this predetermined belief that it's that they want to hurt women, that that all of our policies are policies that are damaging to women. We don't care about them, and all these kind of crazy things. You mentioned that you're going to be doing stuff to help women who decide to make, I believe, the correct choice and save the baby's life. We know about the safe harbor laws that were already discussed in the Supreme Court. What else can states do to make this an easier choice for women?
Well, one of the things we're doing, and we have several bills coming up in January, is we're going to start giving more money to children's advocacy centers. You know, we're going to have some babies that are not going to be wanted. We're going to make adoption very easy in Mississippi, not that we are going to just let everybody adopt a precious baby, but we're going to make things better. We're going to make sure that TANF funds are available and they're not so hard to get. We're just going to make sure that whatever, child care, all of these things, we have got to step up to the plate and make sure that these babies are going to be taken care of, and we're going to help these mothers take care of them. Now, we want to make sure that they're able to get a good job, with equal pay for women. There's so many bills that are coming up in our next session that we want to make sure that we're able to help these mothers take care of these babies, and we want to be there for them. We don't want to just say, okay, we made this law, see you later. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to work that way in Mississippi, and I'm going to fight just as hard to take care of these moms and babies that I did for this law.
Let me go to this last one here with you. And I don't know, maybe you're in the business of legislation, and you know, maybe this stuff doesn't hit you the same way, but best case scenario here, you're talking about a bill that, you know, this may play out in a way that saves millions of lives. Have you stopped and thought about your place in all of this? This could be a historic moment in our country's history, and it could affect millions and millions of people.
Well, you know, I was at work the day they told me that they had taken up the case, and my phone was blowing up, and you know, it hasn't sunk in. I went up to D.C. and stood out in front of the Supreme Court the day of the hearings. And, you know, it kind of sunk in a little bit then. And, you know, I have, you know, until they make that ruling, I'm not quite sure. This, you know, little woman from Brookhaven, Mississippi, wrote this bill, and it may change lives in America. And I would be proud. I would be proud author of this bill that's able to save millions of babies' lives.
Mm. Representative Becky Curry, be sure to head to my Twitter account, or hers as well. We'll make sure the op-ed from Newsweek gets out there. It's called I authored Mississippi's Abortion Bill. Here's Why. You can send it to every single person who says that the Supreme Court was mansplaining to women about the abortion bill. A woman wrote the bill. Be an important detail for people to know. Representative, thank you so much for doing this, and thank you for coming on the program, and thank you for the work you've done on this.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is insane. It's like leaving your keys in the car while you run into a gas station for a snack and having the window down and the car's unlocked. Now, maybe you come back and it's still there. There's nice people around. Maybe they don't steal your car. But what if you come back to see your car driving off into the distance? Every time you connect an unencrypted network, any hacker on the same network can access your personal data. They know what they're doing on this stuff. I don't know how to defend myself. I let ExpressVPN do that for me. They create a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Hackers can't steal your sensitive data. You know, look. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer like a billion years, like literally a billion years, to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. They don't have a billion years. You don't have a billion years. Just be safe while you're out there on the wild west of the internet. It's easy to use. You can fire up the app, click one button to get protected. Plus, it works on all devices, iPhones, laptops, tablets, Android, whatever you got. You can be secure on the go. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/stew, expressvpn.com/stew. You can get an extra 3 months free if you go to that address, expressvpn.com/stew. So Leah Thomas is a pretty good swimmer. She is breaking all sorts of records. Of course, she started her career at Penn University, as a dude. So OutKick has an exclusive interview with one of her teammates, who's started as a woman and is still a woman. And, you know, the records have been shocking. The Ivy League 500 freestyle record was broken. Saturday, Thomas met the nation's best time in the 200 freestyle, destroyed pool, meet, and pen program records. In the 1650 freestyle final, Thomas didn't just win and set a new program pool and meet records. It was a total annihilation, 38 seconds ahead of the nearest competitor. This is from one of her teammates. She says, "Pretty much everyone individually has spoken to our coaches about not liking this. Our coach just really likes winning. He's like most coaches. I think secretly everyone knows it's the wrong thing to do," the female Penn swimmer said during a phone interview. "When the whole team is together, we have to be like, oh my gosh, go Leah, that's great, you're amazing. It's very fake." Now, this is amazing. Because it just shows how ridiculous this is. On paper, if Leah Thomas, the transgendered athlete here, gets back down to the times, she's a couple seconds behind the times that she was swimming at when she was swimming as a male. But if she gets back down to those times, which seems to be coming here, those numbers are female world records. World records. Faster than all the times Katie Ledecky went in college, faster than any other Olympian you can think of. His times in these three events are female world records. Only 2 seconds behind the female world record right now. And this is just like, I mean, this is what's happening to, you know, female athletes all over the place. They feel like they can't say anything, but until they do, this is just going to continue to happen. Back in a second. Some things we can all agree on, like the value of a good night's sleep. That's why no gift will be more appreciated this holiday season than Cozy Earth's sheets, pajamas, or loungewear. Cozy Earth's bedding and loungewear are temperature regulating so that you will sleep comfortably all year round. And the temperature in bed is so so utterly important. Thousands of five-star reviews. Cozy Earth sheets have become the bedding of choice for interior designers, celebrities, even massive celebrities like the one you happen to be listening to right now. Cozy Earth is so confident you'll love their products that you can try anything risk-free with their 100-night trial. I mean, 100 nights, you better be able to figure it out by then. Okay, get in it. If you like it, you know, keep it. If on night 99, if you really feel like you don't like it anymore, I guess you can send it back, but that's not going to happen. Right now, you can save 35% on Cozy Earth bedding and loungewear. Start your holiday shopping now and go to CozyEarth.com. Enter the promo code STU and save 35%. 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Promo code STU. CozyEarth.com. Promo code STU. Just over a week away from the Power Hour, go to StuDoesPowerHour.com. If you don't know what this is, we do a shot of beer per minute for an hour with a great cast of characters, including Chad Prather, half-Asian lawyer Bill Richmond, my wife Lisa Page, Sarah Gonzalez, Jason Buttrill, so many chipping in on this one. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's really ridiculous, and it's a great way to kick off Christmas vacation. Come check it out. And if you go to StuDoesPowerHour.com and you click on the RSVP for the event, that will basically get you hooked up to, we're going to be giving away some prizes to the people who are a select group of people who RSVP. Get involved and be one of those people who could win. Check it out. StuDoesPowerHour.com. We've got the merch there. We've got everything there. Check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let me give you, let's see. Let me give you this first. We have this right here, by the way, StuDoesMerch.com. It's not a riot. It's a mostly peaceful tree lighting. And that was something we did last year. It was a thing we came up with last year. However, it came true in New York. We mentioned it the other day. They lit a Christmas tree on fire because that's where we are. The Fox Christmas tree arson suspect, which I'm pretty sure there's a lot of cameras out there. They pretty much know who it was. He was released without bail. Because this is the way our society handles these things now, which is completely nuts. I mean, it's just not the way we should do it. The bail issues here are really affecting our country. And, you know, one of the easiest ways to get crime out from your community is to take people who can continually commit crimes out of the community so they can't affect people. They go behind bars. Well, we don't want to do that anymore. That's apparently not what we want to do. Because of that approach, largely, we have seen 12 cities now. 12 cities have broken annual homicide records. Quick rundown. Austin, Texas, by the way, broke it. Last time I was in Austin, Texas, I was in the area of a mass shooting just 24 hours before it happened. So that's that was fantastic. Albuquerque, Tucson, Louisville, Columbus, Baton Rouge, Philly, Rochester, Toledo, Indianapolis, Portland, St. Paul. Tons of these places all have all-time records in homicide. So, you know, this is going well. This whole experiment is going really, really well, and all of these ideas are working really, really well so far. I hope Joe Biden does a little bit more just to help us out down the road to terror and tragedy and horror. Back in a second. If you have a second, subscribe to the podcast, rate and review it. You know, 5 stars is the appropriate number of stars. I really like this guy's username for an audio podcast review. I watch it on YouTube usually. What's that? The username. Being a vegetarian almost cost you a star. You've been warned. Fair enough. Fair enough. You can also watch the show on YouTube if you'd like. And you can comment live during the show. No Studamus predicted the Cuomo debacle. I'm rethinking my faith. Fair enough. It's true. Well, you were all there with me. Good to see Dana Lash again. I was wondering what she was working on. Great guest. And congrats on the 400th episode. Yes, right. We passed 400 episodes. Maybe we'll celebrate that a little bit on StuDoesPowerHour.com next week. We'll see you tomorrow.